G'day, this is the 50th episode of the Sea Creatures Podcast. So to mix it up and celebrate, I'm actually going to be today's guest. And my good friend Suze Krober is going to be the show's host for this episode. It's a little bit different, but I hope you like it. And a happy 50th to Sea Creatures Podcast.
Hey there, welcome to the Sea Creatures Podcast, a show about all the amazing animals beneath the waves. Each episode, we chat about a specific sea creature, but today I'll be interviewing your fearless host, Maddie Testoni. My name is Suze Krober, and I'm an old dive buddy of Matt's. After 50 episodes with Matt, I think it's time we get to know the host a little bit better. So with that, let's dive right in. Hey Matt, thanks for inviting me to interrogate you today.
No worries. It's great being a guest on my own podcast.
Well, I'm very honored to be the first person to interview you here. So I wanted to start off with asking you how you got into diving.
Well, I was thinking about this earlier and I was like, okay, how did I get into diving? Because I always tell people a slightly different story. But I guess I studied, you know, a bit of marine science at uni. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to dive overseas in Cambodia. So me and a friend got our dive license. We did one dive over there and I didn't dive for about a year or two. And then a few friends were like, oh, let's go for a dive or two. And I went into the dive shop and I met this really, really charismatic dive trainer called Carl. And if anyone has done their instructor in Australia, they probably know their dive instructor in Australia. They probably know Carl because he's pretty charismatic. And he was just like, oh, it's so fun and so amazing. And I was like, yeah. He was like, come along to this careers night. And I was like, okay, all right. Free pizza. So went along with the careers night and they were like, you can work on tropical islands, you can do all this. And I was like, sign me up, here is all my money, which was literally the case. I was like, how much have I got in the bank? Well, my entire savings. So I did that. I never really made it to work overseas in a tropical island. I am working on an island at the moment, but it's Tasmania. So I went through, did my instructor and stuff. And that's pretty much how I got really into diving, just a whole bunch of really cool people and charismatic Carl.
So do you remember, you know, the first dive that you were on that really like sold you on diving?
Wow. Not really. Like I remember like, I'm trying to think, they were all pretty cool. There was a few different dives, probably like once I was doing my training that were pretty amazing, like seeing a turtle in Sydney Harbour. That was really cool. Having a giant cuttlefish come up and like interact with me. That was another really amazing experience. And even things like doing an amazing dive in a river where you had to use a bit of rope to secure yourself to the bridge so you didn't go flying off. And then when you let go, it was like a roller coaster. So experiences like that, I think.
You know, this is just to give the listeners a little insight. This is exactly what it's like to dive with Matt. You can be on the most boring dive where you see the least stuff and you come up to the surface and Matt's like, wasn't that a great dive? That was the most fun. I just had the most fun. Did you see that one thing in the last 45 minutes? That's so cool. That's how every dive is. So how about photography? You know, making the choice to be into diving, but then, you know, bring a bunch of expensive camera equipment underwater it's a really big choice. And as I've learned from you, because I'm not a photographer, really changes the way that you think about diving. So how did you decide to get into dive photography and make that your focus?
Well, I remember when I was in high school in year 11, and we started thinking about careers, and I had this really old careers advisor and he was all rusty. And I was like, I want to be a wildlife photographer. And he was like, anyone could be a wildlife photographer. What subjects are you doing? And I was like, oh, science stuff. And he's like, go to uni, don't be a bum. And I was like, oh, all right. So I gave up on my dream of being a wildlife photographer and then went and studied science, and it kind of was good. I learned a bit, but then I didn't really touch a camera until I'd just finished becoming a dive instructor. And as part of this internship that Charismatic Carl sends you on, you have to go and work on the reef for a few weeks. So I was like, oh, I'll get a little camera because why not? You know, you're only on the reef once or twice. And I bought this little camera, took it up there. And I remember taking, I think I took like three good photos. One was a clownfish, everyone's favorite photo, clownfish. Then another one was a photo that really stuck with me and kind of like inspired it was a juvenile emperor angelfish. And if you've ever seen one of them, they are really spectacular. And it was a fluke shot. Like lots of, you know, some photos, especially when you're starting out, just fluke shots and you just nail it. And so I got that, and then it just kind of spiraled out of control over the next 10 years until I'm now carrying like a 25 kilo piece of metal and electronics worth more than my car.
That's really funny. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the your favorite adventures that you've been on? Diving with you is always an adventure, even if you're in Sydney Harbor or, you know, right in Hobart. But what are some of your most far-flung adventures that you've been on diving and photographing?
Oh, wow. So I feel like, you know, because there's big ones like Mexico, which I'll talk about in a second. That was really amazing. But you've also just got to think anywhere local even, because some amazing things happen. So I remember one dive in Melbourne was particularly amazing because a lot of divers now in Melbourne know about the spider crab migration, where hundreds of thousands of these football-sized crabs come up into the shallows and spread out, and you can't even see the sand. And I was diving with a mate at night, and I didn't even know about this. And we're just swimming along, and all of a sudden we came upon a pile, like a mound, of about 10,000 crabs. What is this? So I guess like that would be, that's a one really memorable experience where you just discover this amazing animal migration that you never knew and it's right on your doorstep. Mexico was an amazing dive adventure, mainly because of one dive. And this is the dive I always tell when students are like, oh, what's your favorite dive place? Best dive ever was one dive in Mexico where we had dolphins chasing fish at us, manta rays sitting on top of us, and then a whale shark swim past with two dolphins. And I swear one rolled on its back and waved to me. I swear that happened.
Well, I'm extremely jealous of that experience for a number of reasons. But, you know, something that's already coming through, and it shouldn't be a surprise to any listener of this podcast, is how anytime you talk about diving or photography, the things at the center are always sea creatures. And it's the reason I was so excited when you started this podcast. And I'm sure it's the reason why your listeners, you know, come back again and again. That for you, you know, so many divers talk about the experience of diving and how it makes them feel, but you're always interested in the life around you. And so I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about Sea Creatures, the thing, versus Sea Creatures, the podcast. How did you go from, you know, your love of these animals and the amount of knowledge that you have in the way that you dive and photograph them to turning that into the opposite, a purely audio form of engaging with something that otherwise seems so visual?
Wow, I've never really thought of the visual to audio comparison before. I guess the podcast started because I wanted to start as a lockdown project, as many of these things do. I really wanted to share the ocean with people. So we started tried to record one or two podcasts. I started off with Karen Green. She was on one of the episodes early on about the Grey Nurse Shark. And we kind of sat around and we tried a few different formats and it just all felt a bit forced. And then we were like, well, what's something really, you know, really enjoyable or really passionate? And I was like, well, like, you know, the individual animal. And then we're like, well, you know, why don't we do that? And I guess the big thing for me was if you Google something like a nudibranch or a grey nurse shark, you get the museum website, which gives you a bunch of technical data. This shark can be found here. This shark lives at this depth. This shark eats that. And you go, yeah, okay. And then you find a bunch of photos online where, you know, it's an amazing photo or something of someone's taken, but and all it says in the caption is grey nurse shark. And I was like, well, if you're not a scuba diver or you are a scuba diver and you haven't done this before, how do you know what it feels like? Like, it feels amazing to go diving with these animals, but if you Google it, there's nothing that tells you what the experience is like or little cool facts that are in relation to the animal itself, rather than like just a fact you read, a fact that's in context. So that's kind of how the podcast started. I was like, I want to engage people that are scuba divers, but not like marine biologists, you know, and not, you know, interested in all the technical stuff, but interested in the animal, almost like a personal interview of the animal.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And, you know, you talk about your guests. I think it's really interesting listening to your podcast. Until we were talking before this episode, I never really thought about where all your guests come from. And there's such a diverse group of people in the way that they engage with these animals and their knowledge about these animals. So how do you find your guests? You know, you started off with a friend of yours, but you know, you've branched out to all these different people from all over the world. How do you find them and what makes a guest, you know, compelling to you to bring them on and have them tell their story?
Well, I guess it's a bit of a mix. It did start with people I knew in the dive industry. that I thought were really inspiring. So as I said, like Charismatic Carl, I haven't had him on a podcast yet. I'm working on it. But it's people that may kind of inspire me. So it might be you're down at a local jetty and you're like, oh, what did you see on your dive? And someone's like, I saw this amazing squid. And I'm like, you need to be on the podcast about squid because you love squid. So that's kind of how it started with a few people. And then going onto Instagram, you see people that not just take photos, but are really passionate about the animal. And especially if they're posting, you know, if you post a photo of a great white shark, it's probably just a photo of a great white shark you've taken rather than something you're really passionate about. But if you, you know, post a photo of a nudibranch with weird colors, then it's probably because you're really passionate about that animal. And so I use kind of social media and those things. I just have a look and who's really passionate? Oh, this guy. So one of my favorite guests was a guy who was really passionate about polar bears. And yeah, just talking to him was amazing. It wasn't like I was recording the podcast at all. It was like we're having an epic chat. And so that's kind of how, just people that are really excited about a particular animal.
So in thinking about the guests, do you also think about what types of animals you want to feature? Like, are there animals that you're really excited to feature? And are there animals maybe that you're not so into and you don't want to have them on your podcast?
I mean, look, there's animals that I'm not so into myself, but if someone is really into this animal, I'll give you an example. I don't care at all about krill or plankton. Like for me, I can't really photograph it. I'm not that interested in it. I know it's cool, it's very important, but if a guest is really into krill, then that's all that matters. So I guess the animals that I really like featuring are the weird and quirky ones, because so often you'll tell someone about an animal and for the instance the other day, I become friends with a diver and he had never heard of a fish called the red velvet fish. And to me, that is why I love diving where I am. I haven't seen one recently, but they're this amazing fish only found here. He's done thousands of dives and he'd never heard of it locally. And I was like, oh, that is a big, you know, that's something why I like weird creatures on the show. But animals I'm sometimes not as excited about are the bigger, more known about animals. So, you know, I would love to do a great white shark podcast, but I'm not as excited about the prospect, I think. I think I will do one and it'd be interesting, but you know what I mean? It's a bigger animal. Yeah, everyone knows about it. There's lots of information about it. Whereas, you know, if the red velvet fish, there's no information about it. So it would really engage a lot of people. Whereas the great white shark one, I would have to have a really special guest to spend a lot of time. So I guess that's the thing. I don't want to have someone on the show that has only, you know, has interacted with it maybe once and is like, oh yeah, I saw this creature. I want someone, you know, I did a good example of something that doesn't work quite like that was the Mola Mola episode, where a friend of mine had seen, like, had a really close encounter with a sunfish, Mola Mola. And it was only, you know, a short encounter, but it blew her mind. So that was cool. So I hope that kind of answers the question in a weird way.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm very jealous. I remember that episode about the Mala Mala having spent a lot of time attempting to see one and never having seen one. So how do you, I think about this every time I listen to any podcast, but how do you make your podcast? Like it comes out as this, you know, beautiful, perfect thing, but I know that's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. I know you already said it came out of pandemic when a lot of us didn't have better things to do with our time. And so you could learn things, you know, on your own along the way, but you know, how do you go about from, you know, the idea to putting it, you know, out there on the app for us all to listen to? How do you go about creating it?
Well, I guess I start by looking for guests. So often it'll be, you know, like, as I said, one of the easiest ways is trawling through Instagram and finding someone who's really passionate about that. And so once I've engaged them, kind of like, oh, come on the show. And most people are like straight away, yeah, awesome. Why not? And then the easy part is basically doing the interview. And that's the part I love. And I'm always like, yeah, doing. And that's why I have about 20 podcasts already recorded, but not edited. So you get the guest on. I do a little bit of research. So I know the basics of the animal. I already know quite a lot, basics of some, but you know, a few more weird creatures like the Mola Mola, for instance. I did a lot of research because I didn't know that they like about their reproductive system or all those amazing things. And so then the interview usually takes about an hour. Most of the time it gets trimmed down to about 20 minutes. The editing process takes about 3 hours. And that's why I'm always behind. It's always a a forced labor of love, the editing process. And it depends on the guest. Some guests, their words flow together. And then some guests, their words are a bit more separated. And so separated word guests are amazingly easy. I've recognized the word in my audio recordings. So it's in my brain now. So I'm like, oh, that's an cut it out. That's an cut it out. But if it's melded together, it's a little bit more difficult. But that's the boring technical part of it. But yeah, that's basically it. And then hopefully I have a photo of the sea creature so I can promote it. If not, then I'll ask my guests. But it's always a bit weird asking guests for like their own photos to promote their own time on the show. So, but for polar bears, I had to because there's no chance I have a polar bear photo.
Well, you know, as a fast talking American, I'm sorry about how awful your editing job is going to be for this. But hey, you asked me here, so you brought this on yourself. So if someone were, you know, trying to start their own podcast, what kind of advice would you give them about getting started?
You need to try a few things first. You need to try different podcast formats and see what works and don't be in a rush. When I started this podcast, I had like recorded 5 episodes, I'd edited 3, and I kind of did a lot of prep for the launch of it. Because keeping up the momentum is super important. It's like anything with social media, modern kind of media these days, is you've got to have a lot of content and you've got to have it initially at the start really ready to go. And so you can't release one episode, wait 6 months, release another. Especially for the first 10, you really need to just pump them out. But when I first released this one, I had all these episodes to go. And I remember another scuba diver where I was like, oh, that was my idea. I came up with that idea last week. And someone's like, he's stolen it and he's gone off with it. I heard this rumor going around. I was like, that is ridiculous. This has taken me so many months to get to this point. So I guess, yeah. So be ready and do a lot of prep work. Try a lot of stuff out. But the other thing would be something you're passionate about, you know? And I think that's why true crime podcasts are so popular, is because the person who's doing it really wants to know the answer, or they really worked hard to get the answer. And so with my podcast, I just love sea creatures. For instance, I get a lot of people asking me why I don't do cave diving. And I've done cave diving. And I remember being in a cave and being like, this is probably the first boring dive I've ever done because there's no animals. And so, yeah, I think as long as you're passionate about something and you're willing to do a bit of prep work and, yeah, don't be in a rush. That would be my piece of advice.
Wow, I'm just absolutely floored by the fact that you think that any dive you've ever been on is boring, since we once went on a lake dive in frigid water and saw, I think, 3 fish total, and you thought that that was epic. So I'm just absolutely flabbergasted. So a little bit more in how the sausage gets made, but not about the podcast, about photography. I'm sure everybody's seen your photos either through the podcast or on your Instagram, but when you're tell me a little bit about how you go about framing your photos. How are you ready for what's going to come at you on a dive? How do you prepare in advance? And then what are you doing underwater to look for your shots and take advantage of them as they come along?
Wow, that's a huge question.
Huge question. Break it up as you'd like. Answer whatever part you'd like.
All right. So I guess practice. So, and practice knowing about like how your camera works and what it can do to get those kind of the photo that you want. So I guess to put that in context, anyone, like, so I mentioned earlier on that I took that photo of that juvenile emperor angelfish. And it's a great photo. I still look at it today and be like, that is a great photo, but it was totally by fluke. You know, you go out and get a camera now, you'll go get a good photo. You know, it might be 1 in 100, 1 in 200 photos, but you'll get a good photo you'll be happy with. The more you practice with the camera and the more you get to understand the settings slowly, that number improves so that maybe 3 out of 10 shots are really good, or 4 out of 10 shots are really good. I mean, I don't think you're ever going to get 10 out of 10 or even 9 out of 10. But once you start to understand how the camera works, and the other thing I would say is like a big lesson for me, or a big thing that I tell people, is start small and work up small. So I see a lot of people that, you know, they have a little tiny GoPro and then suddenly they turn up at the dive site with a 20 grand camera. And you go, mate, you don't have any idea how to use that. Not that it's like you shouldn't do it, but if you start with that small camera and then you add a light and then you get a slightly bigger camera and add 2 lights, these kind of things help you learn your way through the photography. in terms of the photo, and this is going to sound a little bit weird, but a lot of the time you need to shoot to edit. And so a good example of that is if you're trying to get the seafloor flat or you're trying to get things in line properly, it's not always possible to have everything lined up perfectly in the photo. But if you take the photo maybe with a bit of like 10% or 20% extra around the side, so instead of taking a real close portrait, take a little bit further away and you crop it in, then you kind of, so I kind of shoot to crop, I call it, just so you kind of reduce the image by about 20%, but then you can line everything up perfectly. And in terms of the animals, any kind of cool sea creature, or even any like boring sea creature is fun to photograph. For instance, I mean, I'm sure they're not boring, but sailfin gobies are everywhere. There's this tiny fish with this beautiful sail, and you can be on the most boring dive on the planet. And if you listen to the Goby podcast, you'll know that they live everywhere. It sounds really bad. Maybe the cockroaches of the sea. If there was an atomic explosion, gobies would be the only fish left. So sometimes all I see is a goby, but if I, you know, you take a spotlight down, you take a specific light down, then they actually turn into these really amazing fish to photograph. Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Know your kit, but then always look for any fish. Like, it doesn't matter how ugly it is or how boring it is normally. There's always a light in which you can show how amazing it is.
Has there ever been a dive that you've been on with your camera where you decide to just put your camera away and enjoy the dive?
That occasionally, usually at the end of a trip, I'll be like, okay, I'm doing a non-camera dive. And so far, I haven't seen anything too amazing on those dives where I've been like, damn it, where's my camera? But I guess one piece of kit which has really blown my mind, I've been lucky enough to get lately, is it's what's called a macro to wide angle lens. And basically the misnomer for years has been that you can't shoot macro and you can't shoot wide together on a nice camera. And usually you can't, but this piece of kit has let me do that. And it's really like really changed how I dive. So I used to have to prep which camera I wanted, what camera components I wanted. Now I've kind of shoot a lot of stuff just with the cheapest lens I own, which is really cool.
For the photography novices among us, none on this podcast, what's the difference between macro and wide?
So macro is the opposite of what it says, because that's the way the lens works. So macro is anything really small. So anything kind of smaller than your hand, you would use a macro lens for. And then the other option is you use a wide angle lens, which is anything that is like big, like a seal or a whale, or even a sea dragon you might use a wide angle for. Anything you want to, or even a scene shot. So I think that's often one thing forgotten about the photos is you need to set the scene and tell a story with your photo. Don't just take it head on straight, you know, photo and don't leave any story. You need the story. So wide angle makes the story, whereas I feel like macro is a little bit more artsy.
So also for the novices, or the people maybe just getting started, what is your biggest above the water and below the water pet peeve about new photographers?
Well, I think for a long time I've been like, oh, the GoPro photographer. And it's not a thing about GoPro. GoPros are great and you can get some amazing stuff with them. But I remember being on a dive and I was like lining up this turtle photo and I was like really relaxed and making sure I didn't muck up any sand or anything. And this diver just dropped on top of me and then had this GoPro on a really long stick and just like shoved it in the turtle's face and all around and then swam off. And I was like, that's not making any good video or any good photo. And it's actually made that person a worse diver because they're just bouncing around using their air. So that's kind of one of my peeves is people that just have to get in there and they don't care about the animal. They're just like shoving it in their face. And then the other would be underwater would be, this sounds really bitchy, is when people hog an underwater creature. So I've been on dives where like, and I've got a good friend I go on dive. We found two weedy sea dragons with eggs the other day. And I took a few photos, then backed off. Then she took a few photos. And then after the dive, we were both laughing because we were both awkwardly in each other's photos. And I was like, oh, I don't mind if there's a diver in the photo. I think it adds a bit of story to it. And she was kind of the same. Exactly. Suze, you're always a great dive subject to have in the photo. It's true. And, you know, you've got to work with what you've got. If there's a diver in the background, that's what you've got. Try and work with it and see what you can create with that. Don't be like, oh, damn, they're ruining my photo. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make. Oh, there's a diver in the background ruining the shot. Like, if you look in any dive magazine or any kind of Australian Geographic where there's a lot of animals, nearly all the time, especially Lonely Planets, nearly all the time, there's a scuba diver in the photo. So if you want to shoot for magazines, get a scuba diver in the photo. But back to the thing is animal hogs. So some people will sit on a sea creature for like 20 or 30 minutes, even though you're there. If you're a good photographer, you should only need a few minutes. And also, you're not shooting for National Geographic. And no one shoots for National Geographic. And I'm sure National Geographic photographers don't hog stuff either. So one photo of the rare creature isn't going to make everything. Just enjoy it. And like, you know, take a quick snap. If you don't get it, let someone else try.
I'm going to make you stay on pet peeves for one more second. What about on the boat? You know, new photographers, old photographers, or divers in general, what are your on the boat or on the dock, on the pier, jetty, beach pet peeves about your fellow divers?
I guess it's all about, the big one for me, it's not even photography, it's just diving, is about the gear. So often, you'll be in gear, and I've got different gear that works for different stuff, and someone will be like, oh, these are the best fins ever. And I'm like, I don't know. I think they're just a pair of fins. Everything works differently for everyone, or especially certain types of dive gear, certain companies. I feel like everyone who dives with it think that, oh, this is the best stuff, or this is the only way to dive. And you're like, every company makes good gear. Every company makes bad gear. Doesn't matter what kit you've got, as long as it works for you. And so people telling you like, oh, you should get these fins, they're much better. You go, ah, that's such a pet peeve.
So knowing you for as long as I have, I know that you always have about approximately 70,000 ideas for things you want to do next, things you want to do. And I think you once called it about yourself. You said it's Matt's bucket of crazy ideas. So I want to know what's floating to the top of that bucket right now. What are the next things on your list, or what are your pie in the sky ideas?
Well, I guess the next thing on the list, and it's been on the list for a while now, it's just I've been a little bit short on time, is I really want to get the YouTube channel going, but not for videos per se of sea creatures, which I still kind of work on, but I find I'm more of a photo man. I like photos a bit better. But just explaining different underwater camera equipment and where to start, how to get started, that's kind of what I'm keen on. Because when you look up stuff, you go, what is a dome? Do I need this dome? Do I not need this dome? And I get a lot of people message me and ask questions like, oh, should I get this glass dome or should I get this plastic dome? And while I'm really happy to answer and I love talking about dive gear and photography kit, there's nowhere to go to really get these answers in a casual form where it's not someone being like, this is what you need to do this. I make this product and this is what you need. Just, yeah, look, I think this works really well. You could try this or this. There's no right or wrong answer.
How about, so that's, you know, that's a professional goal, Matt. That's something you're going to bring to the world. And I can't wait to watch your YouTube channel and then take none of your advice and continue to never be an underwater photographer. But what about you personally? What is next for you in your life, you know, in terms of your own adventures and, you know, the things you're looking forward to?
Well, I have one not so crazy idea, and then one way more crazier idea, and then lots of other ideas. But the first kind of sane idea is that there's a really rare fish, hasn't been photographed or seen properly in about 20 years. And me and a friend think we know the location of it. And if we do, it would be like discovering an extinct species. And so there's that we're planning on going out to look for. I'll tell you them. It's actually a Zeebel's handfish. The other one would be that me and a friend think we found another animal migration hotspot. And that's all I'm going to reveal about that one. And that'll be next year. The third crazy idea involves a fish that's only ever been found dead on the beach and has been videoed once on an underwater video and only lives in a part of the world where great white sharks are extremely prolific. And so it also lives at 70 meters. So it means any dive you do to see this animal and photograph this animal means that you're going to be doing a safety stop midwater in some of the sharkiest waters in the planet. So that's kind of that idea. And I almost added to it when I was doing, and I've kind of gone off this section now, but we were going to get a boat to help us out and we're going to make like a little expedition of it. So I'd love to make a movie about finding this fish. But the only boat that we could find that would do it, we were like, okay, we can use this boat and it can put its shark cage in and then we can do our safety stop in the shark cage. Now, this boat is only used for shark diving. It's always used for baiting of sharks. And it wasn't until like after a month of that idea, I was like, wait a second. Pretty sure the sharks aren't just smelling the food the boat has. I'm pretty sure they're listening to the cage or the motor. And I was like, yeah, that would be a great idea, Matt. how to go diving for a rare fish and bring a shark tourism vessel along. I feel like it would just attract more sharks to the area. So that's my crazy idea. I still want to do it. Just need to figure out the logistics and maybe have some kind of video sponsorship or something for it, because I think it would be a huge task. But to be able to see a fish with your own eyes no one's ever seen alive before would be amazing.
That would be amazing, but I don't volunteer myself to be your dive buddy on that. That sounds a bridge.
You don't
want to
be the safety diver who just sits at 10 meters and waits for us to come back.
You know, if I could be in the cage the whole time, I think I could handle that. Well, those are some pretty trademark Matty Testoni crazy ideas. So I appreciate that. You know, for the listeners who've gotten this deep into the podcast or this interested about you, you know, just stroke my own ego a little bit. Matt, you want to tell people how we met? Do you even remember?
I do remember that I told you, let's go for a dive. And you were like, yeah, okay. And met this guy, Matt, let's go for a dive. And then I decided to get a haircut and shaved my head and turned up at the shed waiting to get our tanks. And someone was like, oh, who are you diving with? To yourself, Suze. And you were like, oh, just this guy, Matt. He's not here yet. And I was like, next to you, I'm like, I'm Matt. And you were like, oh. That's the first time I remember.
That's exactly how I remember it. And I also remember, getting in your car because you were giving me a lift and being like, I'm definitely going to be murdered. Like, that's definitely how the story ends, because I don't recognize this guy at all. And here's this shaved head guy, you know, the guy before had a lot of floppy hair. And I think he's pulling one over on me. So, you know, luckily it all worked out for the best. Yeah. So I do recommend, if any of you have the privilege of getting to know Matt, he's one of the best dive buddies you could ask for, because there is not a dive, I guess, other than a cave dive that you don't find an interest in. And I know you make me and everybody who has the privilege of listening to you on this podcast or on a dive boat love diving all the more. So with that, thanks, Matt, for letting me put you under the microscope. And listeners, I hope you've enjoyed getting to know your host a little bit
thanks
more.
Thanks for being the guest host. Until next time.
Sea Creatures Podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by myself, Matt Testoni. If you like the show, jump onto our Patreon account, which is www.patreon.com/seacreaturespodcast, or our Buy Me a Coffee account, which can be found off my webpage, www.mtunderwatermedia.com. Production assistance by Georgia McGrath, and music by the talented, awesome, and fantastic Dan Musil. If you've got any questions for the show, or even ideas for episodes you want, or questions about an animal that might be upcoming, so for instance, we've got jellyfish, we've got abalone, a few other things coming up, send us a question to our email, which is matt@mtunderwatermedia.com. Coming up next time on the Sea Creatures Podcast, we're going to be talking all about the amazing world of squid. This has been the Sea Creatures Podcast. Over and out.